Hello, and welcome to the live webinar, Breaking Data Integration Barriers in an Omnichannel Retailing World, presented by IBM and powered by Retail Online Integration. I'm Jennifer DePasquale, publisher of Retail Online Integration and the host of today's event. Before we get started, I'd like to point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We will be addressing the select questions during the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all the bells and whistles of this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience at today's event. Our speaker today is Jane Porter, Product Manager, Retail Integration for IBM Hershey Park. Jane has worked with IBM for over 25 years, during which time she has held a number of roles within IBM's application integration middleware portfolio, a key part of IBM's software division. These have included development on pervasive devices and iSeries, along with a number of years managing development teams within the IBM integration business product line. Jane brings this wealth of knowledge to her current role to focus on driving strategy and product deliverables for our retail customers. So without further delay, I'd like to turn things over to Jane. Jane, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Jen. Good morning or good afternoon, everybody, depending on where you are. I shall be talking to you today about how integration helps break down the barriers that pose a problem as retailers are trying to drive towards an omnichannel retail strategy. So then, to begin with, what I should like to do is to have a look at the retail landscape, have a look at what is driving this omnichannel and single brand experience that the customers desire. And then what I should like to do is look at the various aspects of integration, how they can be applied in retail, and what benefits they might bring to a retailer who wants to actually provide an omnichannel experience. So then, the retail landscape. There's a vast number of channels of interaction that are growing within the retail landscape. And as I was putting together this chart, I was just thinking about how they're growing so quickly. And I realized that, in fact, retailers have been making use of new channels of interaction with their customers for quite literally centuries. As I was looking at some of the history of some of the big retailers in the States, people like Macy's, for instance, I realized that in the mid-19th century, these people were reaching out to their customers, providing the ability to either order goods on via a catalog so that they were able to reach people who could get nowhere near their stores. Then they started allowing customers to place their orders via telephone. So this proliferation of channels of interaction is not anything really new. What is new is the speed with which this is happening and the fact that the customer now is becoming more and more important in driving how they interact with their retailer of choice. I think it's also worth noting that the differentiation between the business-to-business and the business-to-customer, which maybe until about 5 years ago was seen as two very, very separate things, that differentiation is now blurring as the tools and the interfaces that people are using is altering. That differentiation is blurring, and we'll have a look at that later on when we talk a bit more about mobile and the social channels. So this proliferation of channels, how have retailers reacted to it? Well, up until recently, retailers injected a new channel of interaction by creating it alongside their existing channel. And this was actually a good way of working. It allowed the existing channel to keep working. It reduced the risk of both the new project and the risk to the cash flow for the retailer. And it allowed the retailers to add channels of interaction as they wanted to alongside existing channels. So they kept being able to do business on their existing channels whilst having new channels of interaction. Now, the only problem with that is that we've now got a situation where a lot of retailers find themselves in that they have these siloed channels of interaction, and we're not just talking about IT infrastructure here. We're talking about business process. We're talking in some instances maybe about completely different suppliers for different channels, about different personnel for different channels. And what that means is that breaking through those siloed channels of interaction to provide the omni-channel experience, that single brand experience, is quite frankly daunting and in some cases really quite difficult. So in addition to that channeled silos of interaction, we've now got a situation where mobile comes in on the scene. We've got a situation where mobiles have actually changed the way we interact with our family, with our friends, with our business colleagues. So they have most very definitely changed the way that people want to interact with their retailers. I mean, if you think about it, most of us interact with our retailers as much, if not more, than some of our friends. At the very least, most of us have to do shopping for our food at least once a week. So that interaction is very important to all of us. But what it does mean is that we not only have to take into account the fact that that mobile interaction needs access to back-end systems, it also means that the mobile applications themselves need to fit in with our platform of choice that we have used to buy our smartphone or our tablet. And then, of course, in addition to that, we have social media. And people follow social media as they follow fashion. 1 minute, one channel of social media is the buzzword, the thing that everybody's going on to in order to share their thoughts, their ideas. And the next minute, they've all moved to something else. And people expect their retailers to keep up with them in that movement of social media. So what does this mean? Well, what it means is that there's been a seismic shift in focus for the retail industry. This isn't just about do we open a new store, do we actually have a web presence or not. This is a case of where customers are really defining what shopping experience they want. And if they don't find it, they will move on. They expect to be able to use their PC at home, their tablet, their smartphone, and they also expect to be able to go into the physical store and experience a similar look and feel as they experience across the web and the smartphone and vice versa. The more experienced people also want to be able to start and stop their shopping experience depending on which channel of interaction they're choosing at that time. So what this does is it's expanding the scope of integration projects. Now, I should mention here, when I say scope, I'm not talking about huge monolithic 3 or 4 year projects that used to be the norm for the IT industry. I think those days are really long gone. What I'm actually talking about here is thinking outside of the normal IT experience, thinking about how integration can really provide the customer with the experience they want, and also, frankly, the business partner, so that the business partners find it easy and pleasurable doing business with you. So this is about connecting loads of different things across lots of different environments. And as I say, using innovation, thinking differently, thinking about how can I use all of this technology so that it's appropriate for my business, supports my business model, and my customers at the moment, because customers change and businesses change. So then, how are you thinking about building a single brand experience? As I said, the days of the huge, great 3 or 4 year project are well gone. And so people are looking to address omnichannel in a piece by piece movement. It's a journey, it's a story, it's a way of starting where it's important for you and your customers and then moving forward so that you implement it as it becomes apparent that you need to. So you might actually be looking at initially improving your in-store experience. I don't know, that could be anywhere from providing, you know, these lovely new mirrors where you can actually stand in front of it and they put the dress or the coat on you so you can see what you look like in it. I've seen them, and unfortunately they don't also at the same time take off those extra pounds that you would want. Or you can actually think about maybe improving your point of sale experience so that customers can more easily see how much things are costing them, whether things are in that they can't find on the shelves, whether it's available for it to be delivered or not. Or you may actually start thinking about building analytical capability. You've got all of that information flowing from your stores, from your e-commerce, so now you want to start analyzing that so that you might be able to use it for more personalized marketing or smarter inventory management. For instance, using stores in order to fulfill web orders, which of itself can provide benefits. You can reduce your inventory, and you can reduce fragmented inventory, because if you're buying from the web, you don't mind if something comes in multiples, whether it comes from one or more stores, which further enables the retailer to sell at full cost rather than having to mark down. Or you might be looking to enhance supplier relationships, so working with your suppliers to enable direct delivery to store or direct delivery to customer, depending on what supports your business. Or indeed improving the e-commerce experience, making it more immersive, using the information that you've gleaned about your customers so that when they log on to your website, instead of just seeing a website, they start experiencing your brand. You start showing them things that they've looked at before or things that relate to where they've been before, things that relate to things that they've bought, and that's irrespective of whether they've bought it in the physical store or online. And last but of course not least, given the importance of mobile at the moment, you'll be looking at, I would imagine, engaging with your customers using mobile and social media. So irrespective of where you are in your omnichannel journey and irrespective of what your focus is for this year or next year, you'll be looking to build that single brand experience, and you'll be looking around those areas. And integration can help you build that more easily. So I would submit that actually integration is the cornerstone of omnichannel. Without looking at integration as a separate entity and admitting and to yourself and to your IT department how important integration is, the journey towards omnichannel will be very difficult. If you look at integration as the cornerstone, then you can start building that out in a simple manner that supports your business model. So what I would like to do now, and apologies to those of you who are familiar with all of the integration capabilities and patterns, I'd now like to go through various different types of integration and how they might be used in the retail environment. So for every business requirement, as it says here, there are multiple integration options. So I thought that I would actually start here with a really simple schematic, because the irrespective of whether you're purely e-commerce or you have stores and e-commerce, this will resonate. I've been speaking to a number of people in the UK who run catalog companies, and they actually run their e-commerce just like stores. So they have store managers, they have area managers, and so that is why I chose this schematic. So we'll have a look at how you integrate head office applications with your store processing. We'll look at the role that the cloud computing plays and how that interacts with your store associate and customer mobile solutions, and where you can integrate your suppliers more easily. So then messaging. Messaging is a very simple paradigm. IBM's offering in this area is WebSphere MQ. Messaging provides the ability for an application to send information to another application without having to understand too much about that application. It allows the applications to exchange information in the form of messages in what they call an asynchronous manner. So the first of the diagrams to your right shows a point-to-point solution. So application A puts a message onto a queue, and then the WebSphere MQ sends that message to the queue manager, which is used by application Z. And then application Z can pull off that message when it's appropriate and use the information as it requires. Now, what this means is that those two applications can be changed without affecting each other. And it also pushes down the responsibility for ensuring that information gets from A to B to the messaging product, not to the application. The second way of using messages is called publish and subscribe. And I think most people will be quite familiar with this because we've all subscribed to various feeds. This is very similar. So application A puts a message onto the queue, and then these two applications to the right have subscribed to that queue. And so when that message arrives, they both get told about it, if it's appropriate. So why is this important to retailers? Well, WebSphere MQ is retail's most widely deployed messaging middleware. As I've already said, it provides reliable delivery and transactional control. It has end-to-end advanced security, which is really important. It also has a couple of areas which are quite useful for retailers. It has a managed file transfer capability, so it allows you to manage and transfer files around your organization. And it also provides an MQTT server. Now, MQTT is a protocol. The important thing to remember about it is really that it is lightweight and it is used for devices. So small devices like fridges, freezers, it can be used by mobile applications, etc. So then another simple schematic, and we see here that the head office is in red and the store is in blue, and I hope it's showing up on everybody's websites like that. So we've got WebSphere MQ, which is attached to a load of point of sales, and we've got a mobile device that may be used, say, by a store associate. And the information from the point of sale is sent reliably from one MQ to another and is then used by the applications up at head office. And that information can be sent either trickle feed, so that is sent near real time, or if that's not appropriate because the store is not in an area where they have a reliable broadband service, or it just isn't possible because the back-end applications can't deal with the volume of the trickle feed, then you can do a managed file transfer and transfer it at a time suitable for you. So what we can do, because we've got messaging in here, is if we've got a freezer that has got brand new analytics on it so that it can send messages when it is getting too warm, or it can send messages when it has a problem, we can link that freezer to the MQ at the store, and then we can instantiate a new application up at head office, and then the information flows from the freezer to the monitoring application easily. What we can do is we can actually keep that freezer and change that application with no impact either to the link between the freezer and the MQ, or any of the other applications. And so that is what that disassociation or that tight coupling between those two applications does for you. It allows you to easily change things without having a huge impact on the rest of your infrastructure. So then, an enterprise service bus. So we've got our messaging, we've got that disassociation between the two applications, but we've still got quite a lot of knowledge that has to be done to put messages and take messages and set it all up. The idea behind an enterprise service bus and the IBM offering in this space is IBM Integration Bus, is that you can connect anything to anything and that you can act on the information as it flows across your enterprise service bus. So with messaging, the messaging product does nothing to the data at all. It just moves your message from A to B. On the enterprise service bus, you can look inside the information and you can make decisions based on that information. You can also transform information from one application or system to another so that both easily understand it. And you can convert between the different transport protocols and you can distribute the business events. So all of these things are what an enterprise service bus does. And what does the IBM Integration Bus actually have specifically for retail? Well, it has a separate product that sits on top of it to provide retail-specific information for the retailer. Now, the key piece here that I want to talk about is the idea of a development pattern. The word pattern is very overloaded these days, but this is about having a situation where instead of actually getting the developer to understand the underlying network protocol, understand the messaging format, we actually provide, in the form of a development pattern, a very high-level view of the integration. We ask for some configuration values that are relevant to that integration. And then you hit a button, and below the covers, that integration flow is created for you. Now, what you can do is you can use that as is and deploy it. But in the retail space, so many of the applications are set highly configurable so that they conform to your business model. But what is more likely is that you will use that as a starting point providing best practice to then create your own integration so that it then works for you and for the applications that you have. It's worth mentioning here that users can create their own patterns. So if you're a large corporation or business partner, you can actually take those patterns, create your own, and then turn around to your developers and say, right, if you're starting your integrations between our applications, then these are the starting point for you. The IBM Integration Bus Retail Pack provides two of those patterns, one to provide integration between WebSphere Commerce and Sterling Order Management, and one to provide T-Log to POSLog, and that is for the Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions 4690 ACE format. And then it also provides an ARTS operational data model sample that you can use with the T-Log pattern. So how would you use IBM Integration Bus or an ESB? Well, what I've actually done here, and I hope it all works, is provide some animation to show the difference between the messages that just went from A to B or A to multiple Bs, and I'm using the freezer. So what we've now got is we've got our WebSphere MQ still down in our store, and we've added an enterprise service bus at head office, and we've linked to that enterprise service bus a number of our applications. So the freezer is sending messages via MQTT up to the freezer monitoring application that sits up at head office. And these flow from the freezer up to the head office so they can monitor what is actually happening with the freezer. Now, the green one shows a message that has slightly different information in it. It actually is indicating that it's got a problem. And so within the integration bus, the decision has been made, instead of routing that to the monitoring application, it will be routed to the service application so that the service application can then take the appropriate action. So that's the key difference here. We're actually looking at the information as it flows across the service bus, and we're saying, oh, this the information here is slightly different, and that means that it has to go to this endpoint, not that endpoint. And now what we can do is we can extend that idea. So we can actually put an integration bus down in our store. And what we can now do is we can have applications in store that can help look after the freezer. So we've got the information that's going normally to the monitoring application up at head office. And now we have a situation where there's a message that appears from the freezer. Again, it's got a problem. But now what the integration bus does is it says, oh, this has got to go to two places. So it sends one to a store application that might be being monitored by the store manager, as well as sending it up to head office. So the key piece here, again, was that the decision was actually taken within the integration bus in that integration flow, and the information was found out to the appropriate applications. So I put this chart in for a little light relief as we go forward in this presentation. And this is really to show precisely what you can do if you have a full-blown enterprise-wide enterprise service bus. That is, that you have all of your key applications linked in. You've got some analytics software. You've got some decision software. And all of your, as I said, your applications are all linked in. So I'm in a supermarket, and I've decided that I want to buy some goods, and I've weighed them out. The idea here is that the information is sent via the enterprise service bus, and it's then sent up to the monitoring application, so they can monitor the goods as they are bought, maybe strawberries. I'm quite partial to strawberries. So that information is then fed up into the predictive analytics software so that it can actually start trying to predict when are we going to run out of this and at what point do we need to send an alert to an employee who has a mobile device down there so that they can actually go to that product and add some more. So I have my strawberries in my basket, and as I check out, you can see the key log down there in the second right, a message is sent to the loyalty card, and they go, oh, Jane's a really loyal customer. This is good. Offer her either cheap champagne or cheap ice cream that are both in a chiller cabinet right by the point of sale to see, because it's likely that she will actually say yes to one of those. So this is the sort of thing that can be used with real-time monitoring and predictive analytics to then provide offers that are targeted and focused on the customer in order to get them to buy a bit more. So the next piece of the integration puzzle, we've actually had a look at messaging and the integration bus, and we've got everything between the head office and the store tied nicely in together. But more and more people are now using software as a service in various departments from the cloud. So how do you integrate that easily into your integrated solution at head office? Well, you need some cloud integration. They have specific ways of integrating to SaaS applications, and IBM's offering in this area is WebSphere Cast Iron. Now, WebSphere Cast Iron actually comes as a physical appliance as well as a virtual appliance and is available as software as a service itself. But the key thing is that it actually provides an easy way of integrating those software as a service offerings in the cloud with your on-premise applications. So, for instance, if your department has gone away and bought some Salesforce.com, so they've been doing a bit of customer relationship management, and they thought, well, this is a really easy, quick way to do it. It's done by subscription. So they've got it all set up. And now 6 months down the line, they suddenly realize, oh, we actually need to integrate all of that information that we've started gathering in Salesforce.com. And guess what? It needs to link up with all the other information we've actually got on premise. So that's when you actually start needing to think about integrating what you're holding in the cloud with what you've got on premise so that all of your information is coherent. So this allows, Cast Iron allows your cloud applications to start integrating with the information that you're holding on head office. So another piece of the puzzle, and I think this is really on target at the moment. I'm sorry, that was a dreadful pun, actually. It was completely... out of the blue, is data power. So WebSphere data power appliances are available in order to provide secure integration from outside your organization to inside your organization. And one of their key points is that they can be used to provide PCI compliance for the retailer. They provide a number of appliances. Some of them are aimed at the business-to-business environment, and they provide specific applications and capabilities for that business-to-business connectivity. And then they've also got security and integration gateways so that they can route and transform the information as well as providing advanced security. Now, these appliances sit in your DMZ. So if you've got stuff coming from outboard, this is where they'll be coming in. You might have linked in your store associates in via your standard network in your store, but if you've got customers or business partners that are actually coming into your integrated environment, you're going to want them to coming in via something secure. And so we've actually fleshed out our picture here. So that what we've actually got is we've got information flowing inside the our organization. It's flowing between the various applications up at head office. And by having them integrated using an integration bus, you can remove those applications or change them depending on what your business, how your business model changes, without affecting the integrations between the other applications. That's the key point here. We've also got integration to our cloud applications using routing and transformation on Cast Iron. And now we've got our business suppliers and our customer mobile applications coming in via data power so that they're secure and you're secure. And last but not least, we have the mobile arena. So we've got all of this information that is sitting on your enterprise service bus in your organization. Lots of it very useful. We've started to look at using analytics for it. So wouldn't it be lovely if you could make some of that information available externally? And APIs are an interesting idea. Two software engineers, they're very comfortable with the idea of an API. It's an application programming interface. It's a way of defining how one programmer can create an application to work with another application. What that means from a business point of view is that you can provide an interface to external programmers or internal programmers, and you can say, this is how you use this application. If you manage it, you can then say, and you can use that application so many times now or so many times a week. And you can then leave it up to them how they use that application. I think it's worthwhile telling a story here how APIs were used to very good effect by the manufacturer, a toilet roll manufacturer. This might not seem obvious, but I love it. This toilet roll manufacturer had the contract to supply public conveniences with toilet roll. And what they did was they made their APIs available so that people could actually write little applications for their mobile phones using their APIs. Now, one of those APIs actually was the location of all of their public conveniences. So one developer, whose wife had recently had a baby, thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if he could create for his wife an application that would allow her to see where her local public conveniences were, so that when their children wanted to go to the toilet, she didn't have to actually wander around and try and figure it out. Now, the upshot of all of this was that this became a very popular app with mothers. And, of course, the toilet roll manufacturer's sales went up because all of their public conveniences were the conveniences that were being used by all the mothers with all the children. So there can be some completely unforeseen benefits here, but you can also use this to actually make sure that employees and business partners have access to your systems and they can access them in the way that they want to, but under the governance of how you want them to use them. So API management is a really good way of extending both internally and externally to both your customers and to your business partners your internal systems in a way that you can easily manage and control. So then, I think that what I would like everybody to take away from this presentation is that, as I said at the beginning of it, integration is absolutely key to flowing that information across the various silos and the applications in order to provide that omni-channel, that single brand experience, but that you can do it in a way that supports your business model and that you are comfortable with. You can use messaging to provide either pub-sub or point-to-point integration between various applications. You can use an enterprise service bus so that you can start flowing information seamlessly around your organization, taking action on that information as it flows. You can use decision management software on it. You can use analytics on it. You can make decisions on the data on the fly. You can include in that cloud integration so that the applications that are used by the various departments now seamlessly and securely integrate their information with the information you hold in your organization, and then you can secure that organization by using security gateways to make sure that the information flowing into and from your organization is appropriate. And last but not least, of course, there's a new world of APIs, there's a new world of making your systems available to people externally. I'd like to thank you all very much for listening to me. Jen, I think that wraps up my presentation, and we can now go to questions and answers if we have any.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Jane. I thought that was spot on. Well done. We have some really good questions coming in, so I want to take the time to get to some of these. And if we don't get to your question, the good folks at IBM will get back to you, so you know, feel free to have those come in. The first question is from Susan, and the question is, data protection is obviously a hot topic right now. We know there's data breaches at major retailers across the country that have happened. Obviously, everyone's aware. Do you anticipate any changes in how data is being collected or in the amount of data that may be collected as a result of these breaches?
Right. So, I don't expect there to be any real change in the amount of data that is being collected or even indeed how it is collected. What I do expect to see is very much more focus on security. Security is an incredibly difficult aspect. There are lots of aspects to it. There's security when we talk about encryption. There's security about how you keep the information. There's security about how you move it across the wire. And I think that, to a degree, a lot of familiarity with now with smartphones and tablets has made people a bit blasé about security. No, I don't think there's going to be a change in the amount of data or how it's collected, but I think that there'll be much more focus on how it's kept, how it's transported, and who has access to it.
Okay, well said. We have another question about integrating mobile data. I think people would like to know, what are some challenges around integrating mobile data across the enterprise, and is it any different than regular data coming across?
No, the mobile data is by and large the same data as all of the other data that flows across the enterprise.
Okay. Another question coming in from Bill. Data is being used today by retailers for personalization in a lot of cases, as we know. Can you offer any examples or best practices around this type of usage and personalization?
Right. Best practice. I think what I would actually say is that if you're gathering people's information, we need to remember that it is their personal information, and they have freely given it up so that they can benefit from giving up that information. I think that it is beholden to the people who gather it to use it appropriately and to make sure that that information is held just once in the organization, and that you know, the user really feels the benefit of having provided that information. So, for instance, a colleague of mine is constantly being bombarded with offers for face cream. Now, he's not the best-looking guy in the world, but he's getting a little tired of the face cream offers. So, you know, if you're going to give offers, for goodness sake, get it right.
I couldn't agree more. Okay, I have another question based on your presentation. Can the integration bus concept be extended to cross-channel experience, such as the buy online, pick up in-store, ship from store to customer, et cetera?
Absolutely. That is absolutely the type of use that we see for IBM integration bus. It's that ability to link in your various applications so that the information can be easily moved. So from the point of gathering the information, you can make sure the information gets immediately to the applications that need to use it. The difficulty with the retail industry is that it's difficult to actually say, so you will be using X for your ERP system, and you'll be using Y for your order management system, and you'll be using B for your e-commerce system, because so many of these systems do multiple things, which is why I'm being so generic here. But, yes, absolutely, that is where the ESB sits. It allows you to make sure that you gather the information, and then that information is immediately made available to the various applications that need it.
Okay, good. Okay, lots of questions coming in, so I'd like to get to a couple more of these.
Sure.
One question is, what are your thoughts on utilizing these tools with unstructured data coming in from various systems, both external and internal?
So, unstructured data, again, that's an interesting one. There are. I'm going to have to stop using that expression. So unstructured data. Now you have to bear with me because it's been a very long time since I've done any coding. So if I sound a little fluffy, fine. And if I don't answer the question, if I can have the name of the person who asked it, I'll get back to them with a more cogent answer. But you can model your data using some of the tools that are available in, say, IBM Integration Bus, so that you can move that information, parse it, and make sure that the information gets to where you actually need it to get to.
Okay. Yeah, and you can respond directly to some of these questions as well. I do have
right.
a couple more here. This is a good question. What is a good rule of thumb for how often you should clean your customer data in terms of mailing addresses, email addresses, all of that good stuff?
Well, I think that it depends. So if you have a very active customer base, I think you'll quickly be able to spot customers who are no longer responding. And if your customers aren't responding, they're not responding for one of two reasons. Either they've moved on to another retailer, or you're not actually giving them the right information. And then it becomes a business decision on how often do you keep asking people for, you know, to use your loyalty or to come into store, and they don't respond before you wipe their data. And again, I think that will depend. I would think that certainly 1 year is more than enough, but I know that my marketing colleagues actually work on 90 days. And again, that depends on the volume of data. So the marketing department holds huge volumes of data. And very often, it's just not possible to hold all of that data for longer than 90 days, sometimes even 60 days, because otherwise the trade-off becomes between the data and the cost of the disk and the cost of managing it. So it's a trade-off between that level. How often do you want to really make sure somebody is no longer engaged, down to what is it costing you in management time and disk space and machines?
Right. Okay. Next question. In addition to customer data, how can retailers benefit from sharing other data? Example, inventory data, shipping data across all channels.
Oh, I like that one. So inventory data across all channels. I would have to ask a question back. How could you implement something like click and collect without actually having an overall view of your inventory? Mm-hmm. It's, to my mind, it's absolutely key. There's some things that retailers need to do where having a single view of your customer data, having a single view of your inventory is absolutely critical. Now, if you've got a very segmented infrastructure currently, then it really is going to be way too big a project for you to suddenly get rid of all but one of, say, your inventory systems or all but one of your warehouse systems.
Mm-hmm.
So as you move forward, you're going to have to integrate those systems so that you're flowing, so they're all getting the same data, and then you can gradually take those systems that you're less in love with out of the integration story and actually get those, get your other business systems using that one, say, for instance, inventory system. Does that make sense?
Right. Okay, another good question. I think this is interesting because I know retail organizations have their own way of dealing with this internally. But in your opinion, what teams or departments within a retail organization should be responsible for data security?
I'm sorry I laughed, but that's a really loaded question.
It probably depends on the size of the organization. But
I'll come back. Right. I think everybody is responsible for security. it goes right down to, you know, how secure is your machine room, right? That's the starting point. Can people get into your machine room? If people can just wander into your machine room, it doesn't matter how much encryption you've got or offsite backup or anything else, well, frankly, you're wide open. You know, it's down to the application developer that develops your applications to make sure that they're implementing your security processes and ways of doing things. So, you know, to me, it really is right across the board, and everybody needs to understand that security is their business. Now, I'm not a security expert. I've sat through a number of presentations on security and PCI, and I think the one thing I took away from those is that there is no one point, especially when it comes to PCI compliance, that says this makes you PCI compliant.
Mm-hmm.
This makes you secure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a number of things that have to be implemented right across the organization in order to make the data and information held by that organization secure.
Okay, two more questions. I want to get to these. Sorry, I know that these are coming off the cuff. One question is coming in from Peter. APIs are generally used to send out information, yet there's a huge opportunity to use APIs for tracking data consumption, of which the results can be used to produce relevant real-time analytics. How do you feel about this, and is this already happening?
So I hope I understood the question correctly, but if I'm getting it right, what I heard was that APIs are used to push information out of the organization, but by tracking the usage of that data, you can then use that to further enhance your analytics capabilities. Is that?
That's how I'm understanding it, yep. Mm-hmm.
Right, okay. So, yes, absolutely. So the IBM API management product allows you to do exactly that. It allows you to monitor how often your APIs are being used. I don't believe it you can monitor how they're being used, but you can certainly monitor if they're being used, and you can then draw conclusions from that as to, you know, what people are interested in and where you might actually, you know, move your efforts in the future. Certainly it would mean that, you know, if you've got six or seven APIs and one of them languishes and never gets used, I mean, first thing, take the damn thing out. And secondly, that then shows you that people aren't interested in that piece of information. And depending on what that piece of information is, may actually give you insight into what your next move as a business might be.
Okay, last question, I promise. In your mind, which is more important, the accuracy and structure of the product or the customer data?
The accuracy or the structure of the product or the customer data? I'm not sure I understand the question, but I think if the customer
he just updated this question. The accuracy and structure of the product data or customer data?
Oh, I see. Am I allowed to say both? Because they're both important in different ways. So if as a customer I'm using various channels of interaction with my retailer and I'm getting product data on when I log on to my PC at home that is slightly different to the same product but with slightly different information on my smartphone, and then when I go into the store, it's not quite the same again. It doesn't really matter how accurate your customer data is on me, because I'm likely not to have bought into that single brand experience. I'm likely to be feeling, you know what? That, you know, these people don't seem to really know what they're doing. Their information about this one piece is really, you know, all over the place. Now, of course, that will depend on how expensive that item is. I mean, I'm unlikely to care if it's describing a can of baked beans, right?
Right.
If it looks slightly different on the web to when I go into the store, really, I don't mind. If, however, it's a handbag that I've been lusting after for the past year, then that's likely to upset me, especially if it costs like $200 or $300 and I've been saving
right.
up for it. So I think that's all relevant. So I think product data is really important, but equally, you know, from I think we've all had this where we've actually had been addressed, somebody's got our name wrong slightly, or you're not using information that I've given you. That will equally annoy me. So I think they're two sides of the same coin, interestingly enough. And
mm-hmm.
I think getting one right without the other, you've still got a coin that's that's not usable.
Okay. Well, well done. We are just about out of time, and I want to thank you, Jane. I thought you gave a great presentation and handled those questions beautifully. Like I said, if we did not get to your question, someone at IBM will get back to you, so you know, feel free to keep those questions coming in. On behalf of IBM and Retail Online Integration, I want to thank you all for attending today's webinar. Be sure and check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archives and upcoming webinars. And if you just take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen, we'd be so grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. And if you're not already an ROI subscriber, please feel free to do that as well. I hope to see you at the next Retail Online Integration Sponsored Webinar. Thanks so much.